Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And for Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander, and our buddy Max Armstrong will be along in just a few minutes. First, let's take a look at what happened on Wall Street this week. On Friday, the Dow closed down 32 points, or 0.18%, at 17,807. For the week, the Dow was down 0.37%. The S&P closed down on Friday 6 points at 2099, and for the week, the S&P 500 was up 0.003%. Now, the NASDAQ on Friday was down about 29.5 points at 4,942. For the week, the NASDAQ gained 0.18%. As always, when it comes to figuring out what happened this week and why, we bring in Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Westwood in Dallas. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
So the question is, again, why? Why did these things happen this week? Lots going on.
Oh, what a confusing week. So, yes, well, let's go back to the start of the week. Monday, we saw a very strong consumer spend number for April, and that was very positive. The market took that well. People spend when they feel good about things. This is one of the highest consumer spending indicators that we've had in the last couple of years. So that was very positive. Thursday, just yesterday, the manufacturing report for May came out, and that also was good. It was solid. And then we got to this morning. This morning, job numbers came out, and unfortunately, jobs added, people were expecting about 160,000 jobs to be added, and instead, it was a shockingly low number of 38,000. So it's one of those where you definitely have an outlier. It's certainly a statement, and if anything can be said that's good about this, it's that it is a clear indicator one way or another. This is going to give the Fed pause, and I don't think we're going to see an interest rate increase in June, certainly not June. The odds for July just went down a lot, and the Fed, I think, is going to step back and rethink things. It's just such an unusual data point to have. No one saw this coming.
That was, as you say, a shockingly low number. It almost, when I saw it, I thought, well, this must be a mistake.
Right. You would think it is a typo because at 38,000 compared to 160,000. Now, remember that we do get jobs numbers. We get an advanced peek at this every Wednesday before the jobs number comes out on Friday. Wednesday, a private firm, ADP, which processes payrolls, releases a number and talks about the number of jobs added. And so people take that as a guidepost for what they expect the government data to come out and show on Friday. The ADP number Wednesday was not shocking. No, the precursors to this, the indicators to this, were not surprisingly low. And so today's number, people are really trying to wrap their heads around it. The other positive that we can take away from this is it does seem to be an anomaly, and I think the market is looking through it, because when you look at the market levels today, while the market sold off in the interim, it really went past this. There are some other positive things going on, and so it is looking at this as an outlier event, and the market didn't close significantly off. It's really just a moderate down.
Well, before we get to those other positive things you mentioned, the indication that June is off the books and maybe July as well for an interest rate increase, I would have thought that that would have sent the market higher, but it did not.
No, and I think that's because the market in the last month has suddenly come back to a rational way of thinking. And remember that normally when rates are going up, if we go back to the very beginning of quantitative easing and coming off of that and starting to increase rates, we were going to be increasing rates because the economy was showing strength. So when the Fed felt comfortable enough to increase rates, that would have been a positive for the market, and the market should have perceived it as such. Instead, the market had a different viewpoint and felt that the economy wasn't ready for higher rates. And so when the Fed talked about increasing rates, the market got very nervous, and it turned into this inverse relationship. In the last month, you finally started to see that come around, and as the Fed and Janet Yellen and the different governors and presidents have gone out and talked about the potential for an increase in rates, and remember, when we talk about increase, it's still a very small amount. It's really not going to be any more than 25 bips, so that's 0.25% on top of the 25 bip rate that's already there. So we might get to 0.5%. It's still not a big number in real terms. The market had come to terms with that. The market was feeling that all right, the economy can handle this. They were viewing that positively as a step forward and a sign of stability in the economy. So it's interesting that the market, which I always say is far too emotional and usually has knee-jerk reactions to things, in this case, finally seems to be acting with some moderation and some sense and looking through. Because remember, that retail spend number that we saw on Monday was very strong. And we are seeing underlying dynamics that are still positive. So it's a hard one to call, but I think the market's willing to give it a wait and see. Sometimes these jobs numbers that come out from the government have a lot of swing and a lot of error in them, and they're adjusted. Mm-hmm. So it could be that it gets adjusted up, and we'll see how it goes.
In fact, the previous month was adjusted lower, wasn't it?
Previous month was adjusted lower, not significantly lower, but a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. And so the first quarter of this year, the average for job gains was about 200,000, 203,000, I believe, per month. And so what's more concerning on the trend is that our most recent report today is one of, I think, the third where it's been below expectations. So we're really looking more for now 160,000, so mm-hmm. a lower number. And we keep seeing that lower number appearing. So we're not popping back up. It's implying that we're close to a mature state of employment. And, again, with this report, reading through the numbers, we saw some other things as well. The unemployment rate went down, but that's because people dropped out of the workforce. So that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
Earnings did come up. So earnings are still up roughly 2.5% year over year. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mixed bag here. I think the best thing that we can say is the market's reacting rationally, and we've got other indicators. I'm going to take this for now as an outlier.
Okay. You want to talk about oil? Did it have, I noticed it didn't move much either way through the week. Did it have much of an impact on the equities?
Oil hasn't had much of an impact on equity this week. There's been some intraday moves where you've seen it swing around. OPEC met this week. There was an attempt, once again, to have a conversation to talk about limiting production or setting caps on production. Iran just doesn't want to play ball. They're still getting back on track and building up their production. Remember that they just got the release, given all the things going around with their nuclear program internationally. They were in the penalty box. That just came off, and they're out of the penalty box now. So they want to really build that production because they want to get the cash flow from the oil in. Meanwhile, the Saudis want to control OPEC, as they have done for years, and they don't want to see Iran getting a lot of power. They're not so keen on that. They also want to keep their market share, so they're not interested in capping production unless everybody's interested in capping production. And I think until you get a conversation between those two big players in the market, you're really not going to get any sort of agreement there. And I think, surprisingly, the market has come to accept that. And, again, the market acting strangely rational for a change. We saw that the market really looked at that OPEC meeting, and, as expected, no one could have a conversation with any results. And the market took that and said, all right, well, we're still on hold. We're still waiting. We'll see what happens. So we didn't see a huge fluctuation around the price of oil. And oil has stayed fairly resilient, somewhere around $49, $50 a barrel this week, which is, you know, on average, pretty good.
Right. What about the dollar? It has shown some strength over the last couple of weeks.
The dollar has shown some strength over the last couple of weeks. And that's a good remember that anytime something moves here, it's really, think of a pendulum. It swings too far in one direction, and it tends to correct back a little bit. So the dollar started out the year very, very strong. In fact, that was one of the things that concerned everyone. If the dollar's too strong, outside countries can't buy our goods because it's too expensive, and so we lose our ability to sell internationally. And so there was a correction as we came later into the spring where the dollar started to weaken. I think we're seeing things start to stabilize out now, and that's a positive. It's a positive because we feel like we have a safer, firmer footing on what's going on. Remember that the Fed is doing something very different. In decades past, when the Fed was looking at interest rates and figuring out what to do, they really only had to consider the U.S. economy. And now that we're such a global entity, when the Fed thinks about interest rates, they also have to think about how it's going to impact the rest of the world and what the repercussions will be. So as the Fed raises interest rates, it makes investing in dollars very attractive if you're not getting such a great rate anywhere else. So China, Europe, both having problems. And then money floods into the U.S., people want U.S. dollars, and then we run into an economic problem trying to sell our goods internationally. So it's a very fine balancing act, and I think we're seeing that happen.
Speaking of the rest of the world, I haven't heard a lot of anguish about the pigs or China or anybody else lately as it applies to the U.S. economy and the markets in particular. Have I missed it, or has it just been very quiet?
No, actually not noticing is a good thing here. So the Chinese government recognized that with the Chinese yuan weakening as it was and this depreciation happening, that was one of the things that spooked the U.S. market. So when we had that severe drop at the beginning of the year and that downturn really into February, it was because we were concerned that the dollar was too strong, the Chinese yuan was going to be able to depreciate, the Chinese government wasn't stepping in to stabilize it, and it was going to create this imbalance between the currencies and between the nation's competitive positions with products. What's happened since then is the Chinese government has stepped in. And so not hearing about it is a good thing because people aren't panicking about what's going to happen with the Chinese yuan and its trade level versus other currencies. We've seen the Chinese government step in, provide some stimulus, and they're trying to adjust in a softer way and make sure that their currency stays relatively flat. It could go down a little bit, but not too much, not so much as to spook or scare the international markets. And I think we're seeing an increased sense of confidence in the rest of the world that the Chinese government is going to handle this well. And that's another sign that the Fed was looking for to feel comfortable about the possibility of raising rates. They've been looking to the external, internationally, both China, Europe, the emerging markets, to look for some stability, to have the ability to raise rates. Unfortunately, today, the question mark came from internal with this really low jobs number.
Susan Schmidt, a senior portfolio manager at Westwood in Dallas. Any big surprises for you this week that you didn't see coming, other than the unemployment report?
Well, certainly this morning I did not see that coming on the unemployment rate and the jobs number, and that certainly was a surprise. I think what I'm pleasantly surprised by is how calmly the market's reacting to it. It really, I think, reversed course during the day. It didn't have a negative flight reaction based on this. I think that we're going to see the market continue to move forward based on fundamentals. I think that the retail number that we saw on Monday is really important because we are driven, and our economy is driven by the American consumer. And so seeing that strong retail spend in April shows me that the consumer is still confident. We're still a healthy economy underlying. It's not racing off growth that we're going to zoom back to health, but we're not really sickly. We're just okay. You know, moderate to slow growth is a good place to be, and I feel like that's where we are in the U.S. economy right now. I'll take it.
So will I. Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Westwood in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
You are listening to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. In for Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander. And joining us is Max Armstrong to talk about June being Dairy Month. And he has as a guest Ryan Yonkman of Rice Dairy in Chicago. And Ryan is a product of a dairy farm.
Where did you grow up on a dairy farm? Tell us about the farm.
Sure. So I grew up northern Michigan, a couple hours north of Grand Rapids, hour south of Traverse City for those who like to vacation that way. And we're currently still have the farm, milking close to 700 cows and actually in the middle of an expansion. So you can look at us and say we're half the problem, going from a double 10 to a rotary. So trying to survive with the rest of them.
We'll talk about those cow numbers in a moment, but I trust the folks sent you off to the big city to learn how to help them manage the various risks and hopefully improve the profitability of the farm.
Yeah, they did. It was an interest I kind of stumbled upon on my own. But when it had come to risk management, my dad, like a lot of older generation dairies, was not something that was part of his business plan growing up. So with my natural push to learn about it, it quickly became my role, and that is what I do for Yonkman Dairy today, along with a lot of other dairies around the country from the rice dairy side of things. And it's become a key piece in a year like last year and this year. Our risk management plan has really helped us be able to do things we're doing now, like grow when a lot of others can't.
When the milk prices take the plunge that they have, it can be not just breathtaking, but doggone shocking for the business. And, of course, you no doubt watch the cost of the inputs, too, for the farm.
For sure. These are tough times. I think last year for a lot of dairies we'd consider a break-even year, considering a dairy that was on the market. I think a lot of guys who had taken positions early, call it the hedger, probably had a profitable year last year. But to walk into this year, those guys that are on the market with no coverage are looking at negative profit margins and probably margins that are going to continue to sting for a while. So to be in a risk managed position like we are right now is certainly a big benefit and allows us to kind of take that that breath of fresh air a little bit, knowing we're going to be all right for the next few months as this thing plays out.
I know this is a little bit difficult because things are highly variable, but when you take a look at, a Michigan or Wisconsin dairy farm and tack on the premiums that farm could get, about where is, give us an approximate range, where is that milk price currently?
What premiums? I should say pertaining to Michigan. Two very different situations right now when you look at Wisconsin versus Michigan, to be honest. Michigan, as I think everyone can read, is really struggled with the ability to process the amount of milk we're making. And this is really about 2 years running now. So we're in a state right now where we need more processing capacity or we have to make less milk. So naturally, the premiums in Michigan, due to the oversupply of milk in our own little market, has really caused those premiums to erode. To make a comparison to the Class 3 price, typically you could say a Michigan dairy is maybe $1 to $2 above that price. We've been coming in right around at the Class 3 price, if not under. And again, a lot of that having to do with the oversupply of milk in Michigan. Whereas if I flip across the lake, jump across the pond there and look at a Wisconsin dairy, due to all the cheese capacity they have there, I see a Wisconsin dairy being able to take better opportunity premiums right now just due to their ability to handle the milk. So you're looking at more of a Class 3 plus situation. So really interesting just as you go around the country to look at the microeconomic situations, if you will, of certain states to see the differences. And right now, Michigan is certainly toward the bottom of the barrel with premiums we're getting for our milk right now.
What would that price be in Wisconsin if you were to peg it?
So to lean on the last couple of months, okay, a Michigan dairy, I think generally speaking, is in that $13 to $14 range. If you're looking at a Wisconsin dairy, you're probably more in that $15 area. Again, getting a little extra premium for a state, I think, that can just handle the milk a little better. And a market that is almost all cheese, which is one of our dairy products that continues to be one of the strengths in our market, giving them that premium.
As a percent of decline from the peak, that's very substantial. It's got to be what? At least a third less, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you rewind to 2 years ago, 2014, a year that certainly overdid it, I think, to the upside with what China came in and bought kind of everything and sent us to $24, $25, $26 milk. There was dairies getting milk checks close to $30 after you tack on premiums. So you rewind today and you're at $15 from 2 years ago. That's a 50% retracement in your revenue. But I think understandably most dairies were able to look at 2014 and call that more of an anomaly than a trend. So you're certainly back into an area where I think we're more used to seeing milk historically trade.
When you look at those monthly figures, you always see that per cow output continuing to climb. You see the number of cows milked being ratcheted up generally when you look at the major milk-producing states. There is a glaring exception right at the top of the list, and that's California, where they continue to curtail the milk output. Refresh our memory. What's going on there?
So I think, first of all, just to the point of making more milk per cow, you know, we're as good as you can find here in the United States. We're going to continue to become more efficient, better at taking care of our animals. And so I think that's a number that'll probably continually grind higher. As far as going back to California and looking at, well, why is that state continue to decline while the rest of the U.S. maybe is steadily higher? California's had a rough go the last few years. You know, they're a state of Large economics, a lot of big dairies. So when there's money to be made, there's a lot of it. But when prices move into areas where they have the last couple of years, some years of very high inputs and okay milk prices, some years of now of very low milk prices, okay inputs is leveraged a lot of those dairies to the point where some were foreclosed and just kind of forced out of the business. But you've got a lot of other dairies, I learned, that are just choosing to get out. There's a lot of other ways, I think, financially to be successful in California with the real estate they're sitting on. You look at the tree market where a lot of these guys are shifting acres from grain crops into trees, selling cows to put trees in a market that's treated. I think a lot of Californians a lot better.
But, you know, it's interesting to ponder what could happen there because the profitability is leaving the tree nut industry. They're expecting to have maybe one good year this year yet, and then after that, because they have boosted the output so much. We see that across agriculture quite often, do we not, including dairy, where we ratchet up the production so much so that it becomes unprofitable sometimes.
Yeah. Without knowing really anything about that industry, I've always questioned myself, when is the bubble for that? Because you've certainly – it's been almost the popular thing to do with a lot of acres just shifting into it as if it was a sure win. But obviously the biggest reason for the California issues always boils down to the milk price. And it isn't. But every other day you can find an article talking about trying to join the federal order, trying to critique something to make them a little more competitive with the federal order, and still a very ongoing thing right now to look at a relative California milk check. They're going to be around $1 to $2 under those Michigan, Wisconsin prices we were talking about. So it is a major setback. It's a tough one for those guys to battle. And even with all their efficiencies on the scales they do things, I think naturally they're able to – that's how they've been able to weather a lot of the storms. Prior, I think it's just worn on a lot of dairies and causing a lot of exit. But I think the thing to really understand with California being down on milk is those cows aren't just disappearing. Most of them tend to just cross over the border and head into another state.
Idaho has become a major milk producer.
Yeah, Idaho, even states like Colorado, some of these places that have added new processing in the last few years have really been calling for the milk. And so you'll see a lot of these cows just move from California into states like that. You'll see a lot of the same owners in California just moving, retaining ownership, but moving them into another state as far as South Dakota and Iowa. And so to your initial point of, production up and total cow numbers up, a lot of those cows are just shifting east, if you will, into areas where it's a little easier maybe to grow feed and a little easier to find a profit margin on those cows.
Fluid milk consumption as a beverage continues to be a real problem for the industry, does it not? I'm doing my share, pal. Let the record show that I can't pass a convenience store without grabbing one of those little bottles. Generally speaking, with intense beverage competition, it's tough, isn't it?
It is, and I'm right there with you. I can't go a day without it. It certainly seems to be a market we've got to continue to learn, I think, to find ways to get that product to the consumer. I think companies like Fair Life are doing amazing things. You probably see that in about every store now, which is call it a high-end milk. I think they market it more of competitive, like with almond milk, something that's got the lactose out of it. So I think things like that are phenomenal for the industry.
Coca-Cola is a partner in that, are they not?
They are. So you've got these big beverage companies stepping into the dairy sector, which I think is probably a good thing. Obviously, Coca, a brand you can probably one of the most recognized brands around the world, you can maybe say. So to have them, I think, on the dairy side of it, helping a company like Fairlife get milk back on the shelf and hopefully getting it off the shelves is a good thing. And maybe that is a start to something new for Class 1 milk.
Talking about the situation for that dairy farm family, again, just going back to our earlier discussion, and you talked about the fact that you were expanding the operation back home, the Yonkman family is, in northern Michigan, putting some of those profits earned a few years ago into capital investment. Did a lot of our dairy farm families indeed anticipate that things could be tougher on down the road? And did they save for that rainy day that certainly is here now?
I would like to think so. After 2014, call it the grand slam, where milk did what it did. You would like to think dairies would have took that and paid down a lot of debt. you know, there was an interesting article out, and I can't cite it right now, but it was it actually showed some graphics of how dairies are more leveraged today than they were in 2009, which I found very, very interesting. So you see things like that, and I guess you look at the milk production numbers, and it certainly shows us the U.S. continues to grow. So you know guys are reinvesting in their business. And so where we are right now, I would have a hard time thinking there's a lot of dairies on the brink of going out of business. I would think this would take a lot more time to be at these levels. But there's certainly information floating around that says otherwise.
It's great to talk to you, sir. Thanks for coming in to be with us. One thing I suppose that happens during these tougher times is we improve our risk management skills. We have to. You know, maybe those lofty prices made some producers a little bit lazy. We've seen that happen to the grain industry, for example.
For sure. You know, 20, 22, 24, 26, $28 milk. It was a phenomenal thing to have captured through the eyes of a risk manager. As soon as we saw that, red flags start flying all over the place of what the next 2 years could look like, understanding this was not something sustainable. And so I would hope that the general dairyman was able to see that and put themselves in some form of position for 2015 and hopefully going into this year as well. But certainly was a lot of opportunities. I think there was, I call the last 2 years some of the easier decisions made. There was a lot of writing on the wall and a lot of very good prices to where dairies, I think, could conservatively walk into a lot of risk management structures that really were pretty safe, generally speaking, but yet would put them in a much better position than they're probably seeing today if they're indeed on the market.
Ryan Yonkman, Rice Dairy in Chicago, helping dairy farmers manage their risk, and he knows it very well, knows the business very well, having grown up on a dairy farm in Michigan. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
And the CME Group is bringing you the markets, and I'm Steve Alexander in for Orion Samuelson. Let's take a look at how the agricultural commodities performed on this Friday and also for the week. At the Chicago Board of Trade, July soybeans on Friday were down 12 and a quarter cents at 11.32 a bushel. The most actively traded contract peaked at 11.69 a bushel, its highest since July of 2014. For the week, soybean futures gained 4.4%, the eighth straight week of gains, and that's the longest streak since one of equal length in 2003. Soybeans have risen in 13 of the last 14 weeks. July corn was 3 cents higher at 4.18 and a quarter a bushel, and for the week, up 1.5%. July wheat, the contract, 7¾ cents at 4.97 and a quarter. The contract gained 3% for the week. Current weather in parts of Europe are not favorable for the wheat crop, and that is what is pushing some of the futures higher at the Chicago Board of Trade. As for corn's increase, renewed rain in Argentina raised concerns about crop losses for the world's number three producer of corn. Checking the critters at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, June live cattle were up 28 cents at $122 a hundred. August feeder cattle rose 27 cents at $146.67 a hundred, while June lean hogs gained 28 cents at $82.30 a pound. Looking at some of the other numbers, crude oil futures dropped 55 cents on Friday, 1.12% at $48.62 a barrel. The dollar had a down day on Friday, its worst day actually since December 3rd, the U.S. dollar index falling 1.67%. The euro settled at $1.13.5, the yen about 106.6 yen against the greenback. Gold had a big day. August futures settled $30.30 higher at $1,242.90 an ounce. That's the markets for this week, sponsored by the CME Group. For Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, I'm Steve Alexander.